Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. My name is Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Tonight is our annual celebration of the Blackjack Ball, a gathering of about 100 professional gamblers somewhere in Las Vegas. Every year, the event is hosted by wit and raconteur Max Rubin, who's with us here tonight. Also every year, there's a competition to win the Grosjean Cup, signifying the world's greatest blackjack player of 2014. And this year, it was won by Rick Blaine. Rick was on our show not too long ago talking about his new book, Blackjack Blueprint. Rick is also with us here tonight. So Max Rubin and Rick Blaine, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Good evening, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on the show here again. This is Rick.
And hi, guys. This is Max calling in from San Diego at the Barona Casino, home of the Blackjack Hall of Fame. Thank you very much.
All right. Go. We got commercials early this week. Okay. So last week, we had Michael Shackelford on the show, who recommended a number of Super Bowl proposition bets. They did extremely well this year. All of the bridge jumpers came in, including no safety, no overtime, no two-point conversion. Each of these bets usually win, but when they go bad, they really go bad, as you're laying somewhere between 4-1 and 8-1. As anyone who watched the game the last 30 seconds know, there could easily have been a Seattle touchdown at the end, making it a three-point game, and Patriots could have come back, forcing an overtime. And with 20 seconds to go, a safety was a real possibility. Until Tom Brady used a hard count and drew Seattle offsides, end of story. As every sports bettor knows, sometimes the stuff you're rooting for has nothing to do with who wins the game. With prop bettors, it's even more so. Gary Loveman, head of Caesars Entertainment, is stepping down as CEO, or perhaps being promoted to the chairman of the board. Loveman took over Harrah's in 2003 and imported a lot of Harvard MBAs for the management team, making the casino run by bean counters rather than gamblers. This presented different challenges to AP. The guy who's been running Hertz will be taking over July 1st. Right now, he knows nothing about gambling, but has 6 months to get up to speed. What do you make of this, Richard?
I really don't know. I mean, I don't know if he's being punished or being promoted, going to chairman of the board. I just worry what it means, you know, for gamblers. A lot of people have been making a living off Caesars for a lot of years. But the one thing in gambling is nothing lasts forever. So I don't know. I just hope that there's still good stuff to be played.
Max, Rick, either one of you have insight into this?
Well, there's a lot more to it. I don't know how much the APs have taken out of there, but there's a lot of normal people that bought a lot of bonds that have just tanked to the tune of about $10 billion. So I don't know about just APs, but there's a lot of people got hurt.
Yeah, mostly bankers, though. I don't feel so too sorry for them.
So, but where does the money really come from? Eventually, it came out of somebody's pocket.
All right. Rick, were you saying something?
Yeah, usually, you know, in modern days, whenever there's a change like this, it hasn't been any improvement for us players. So it's a wait and see, I guess.
All right. Different subject. In the news this week, a federal judge threw out the evidence against two Chinese poker players who were accused of running an illegal betting ring during the World Cup soccer matches. The FBI apparently shut off the internet and then posed as internet repairmen to come in and fix the problem. And while they were there, used lapel cameras to capture stuff that was going on and then told a judge about it to get a search warrant. The judge says that was unfair, threw out much of the evidence, saying it was an illegal search. Richard, is this good?
Yeah, you know, it sounds like something out of a bad TV show. I mean, haven't we even seen that on a bad TV show? I'm glad the judge, you know, threw it out. I think it's ridiculous, so.
Whoever made that decision, with the FBI to do that, I don't think they're going to keep their jobs too much longer. That was just plain dumb.
All right.
Well, and it's too delicious, because if we were to take a camera into a casino to gain an edge, we'd wind up in prison, and the FBI goes in there, and what happens to them? They got their hands slapped a little bit.
Maybe. Yeah, exactly.
It's all fair for those guys.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
All right, good. We got a Twitter question addressed to @RWM21, which happens to be Richard's handle. It's about blackjack, so maybe our guest may wish to weigh in as well. Two related questions. First, assuming perfect high-low counting, at what card penetration is counting a six deck simply a waste of time? Richard.
Actually, Rick, you want to start with that one?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, but I think we need some additional variables in order to consider how to make such a determination. I mean, you know, number of decks used, the rules, and what bet spread you want to use are important factors when making a determination as to what penetration makes a game worthwhile. But, you know, just in general, over the years, most of the players who have been playing the six-deck shoe games on the Las Vegas Strip with the standard strip rules, they're looking for a neighborhood of a penetration of 75% of the cards, basically a cutoff of four and a half decks with a one-and-a-half deck cut. That's just a sort of a benchmark. But you know, again, all the rules, the penetration, bet spreads, I mean, that comes into play.
I would say two things. One, if you're going to count cards seriously, it's definitely worthwhile to buy the QFIT Casino Verite software. And then you can plug in exactly, this is my spread, this is how many decks, this is the penetration, and it'll tell you exactly, you know, what the game is worth per shoe or per 100 hands or whatever. But the really important question is not what's the penetration, it's what will the casino handle? You can have great rules and they could be dealing 5 3/4 decks out of six, but if the casino is going to sweat as soon as you bet a quarter, you're not going to be able to win any money. So, you know, that's really a much more important factor. You know, some card counters like to play only games with good rules, good penetration, and, you know, they get barred right away. And they're willing to do that and just move down the road. You know, there are other guys who are willing to play lousy penetration and bad rules, but with very big bet spreads in a casino that'll just let you play for 10 hours a day if you want to. So that kind of boils down to, you know, personal choice, too, like what, you know, which way you'd rather attack the game.
Well, Munson, correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember reading years ago that if you just went from, on a six-deck shoe, if you went from cutting off a deck to two decks with the same spread, that the one-deck cut was worth twice as much, each shoe would be. That would gain you a value if they moved it back just one whole deck. An entire that shoe would generate twice as much value. Is that valid?
You know, I don't know that number off the top of my head, but that would not surprise me if that were true. Using the same bet spread, it would not surprise me if it were true that your win rate would double going from two decks.
Well, I had to laugh when I saw the question, because I thought about one of the players we all know that was in Atlantic City. And to teach him a lesson, they shuffled up after every hand. But he was playing a game that he wanted them to shuffle up after every hand, and he annihilated them. So I thought that was pretty good. They moved that cut card right up to basically nothing, and still worked out for him.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, of course.
Yeah, yeah. That's a very famous incident. Bill Zender wrote an article about it. They dealt him one round and shuffle out of six decks, and he won $600,000.
Uh-huh. The now let's talk about the blackjack ball. First question goes to Max. How many hundreds of hours does it take you to organize and execute each year's blackjack ball?
I don't know if it's multiple hundreds of hours, but it's clearly 100 hours, and about half of that is just chasing people down because all the pros have never-ending handles. They change them every year. They've got different emails, and I'll get RSVPs from people I've never heard of, and I'll send them back and say, who are you? And then they'll give me some handle I've never heard of, and I'll say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't send you an invitation. And then they will send me a clue as to who they are. I'm still trying to figure out who the hell they are. And then we've got a committee that vets, and Munchkin is part of that. And so I still keep trying to figure out who the hell it is that wants to come to the party. And then we finally wind up figuring out who those guys are. But also we have to take in the RSVPs, and it's the toughest ticket in town to get, and I have to say no thanks to a lot of people that want to come, and then at the last minute extend some invitations when people call in sick or whatever it is. And preparing the questions takes a long time, and just putting the whole party together. But it's clearly over 100 hours of prep time, getting ready for the party and trying to make it look seamless once the party starts, because it's pretty carefully timed, as you know. There's a lot of things going on at the same time.
And your wife must put in about that much time, too.
She doesn't put in as much as she used to. She used to cook for everybody, but she finally got tired of that. And, you know, I do it as a labor of love, and she just does it as a labor because I make her.
Oh, yeah. You whipped
her. She likes most of the people, but there's a few people that come every year that she's not real fond of, that some of them don't have the greatest social skills. And there's a couple of mates of a couple of players that she doesn't want setting foot in the house, and I have to have a little go-round with her every year and say it's just part of the show, sit back and enjoy it. But otherwise, it comes off pretty well, and the toughest part is saying goodnight. And generally about 3 or 3.30 in the morning, I have to start turning off the lights because people don't get the hip and I'm going to bed. But otherwise, yeah, it takes a lot of time, but it's my favorite night of the year. I love that party.
Well, both you and Joanne are giving a huge gift to the professional blackjack community, and you're appreciated by a lot of us very, very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely, Max. You really, over the years, I mean, you just go all out, and it's. I certainly am honored to be invited.
All right, Rick. We're going to talk about this year's competition shortly, but about how many of the blackjack balls have you attended in the past, and have you ever placed in the 21 questions competition before?
Well, I haven't been able to make it to the event every year, although I would have liked to. But I've gone to several since 2000, and the first one I attended in 2000, I ended up, after the first testing, in a playoff for the last seat in the final table. And I think there were maybe four or five of us that had the same score. And Max had us in a putting contest.
Uh-huh.
And it was funny because I'm a lefty and it was a right-handed putter, but I was successful. But a few of the others were as well. So Ed Max threw out a question, and one of my competitors was quicker to answer, and he ended up getting that final seat. The questions are tricky. They're always very tricky questions.
Yep.
So it's a tough one.
The listeners will get an example of that very soon about how tricky they are. Now, before the competition, there's a Calcutta, which is where we bid on who's going to win this 21 questions competition. Now, Max is the MC, and his remarks are full of zingers. Some of his zingers, I suspect, are planned, and some are off the cuff, and probably the ones off the cuff are funnier. I don't know. Max, now sometimes this year it happened that some of the people in the room made some mistakes. Max was all over them like the green on a cucumber. Henry Van Buren, we can mention his name because he's publisher of Blackjack Insider. And he got a little confused during the Calcutta. Max, do you remember what happened?
I do. We started off the betting, and it was early in the betting. Probably the third or fourth team was going off, and the betting got up to $300 or $400, and Henry said, I'll bid $400. And I said, okay, who's going to give me $500? And Henry said, I'll give you $500. And I said, Henry, you're bidding against yourself. You're unclear on the concept, buddy. And he did it again. And this was maybe three players later, and he finally caught himself. And then the guy sitting at the very next table, started with an R, but it wasn't Richard Munchkin, he did it as well. So that gave me a lot of fodder to start torturing some people in the room. And that was great fun.
So when Max, or when Henry bids 400 and then 500, Max makes fun of him and then always gives him an opportunity to bet 600. And for some reason, Henry declines that invitation every time.
Yes, he did. Yeah, he did after that.
Go figure. All right.
Yeah, I know. Darn.
So, Rick, did you bid during the Calcutta?
I put in a few bids on some choice participants. But there were a lot of big guns out there, and I was getting outbid on the folks that I wanted to get a piece of. So I was unsuccessful there.
When the Calcutta was over, all the players get a right to buy up to 50% of themselves. Did you take advantage of that right?
At the end of the Calcutta, immediately before the test, I didn't make any attempt to buy a piece of myself. I didn't think I'd score high enough on the test to make the final table. If I was given the opportunity to buy a piece of myself after I qualified, I certainly would have taken it.
Yeah.
Well, everybody tried that one. Yeah, I said, nice try, buddy. They got the final table. Exactly. You said we could buy a piece of ourselves. I said, not now.
Now that you're already in the money.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing's that easy.
Actually, a couple of years ago, the last year Richard won the 21 questions, the guy who bought him after Richard qualified came up and said, Richard, you're a good friend. If you want to buy part of yourself, you can, which is a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, that was a very nice of him to do, yeah.
All right. Now, some of the questions are submitted by James Grossjean, who's the technical term for James's question is impossible. Now, Richard submitted at least two questions this year. Both of them are ineligible to take the quiz because they've won the first prize three times in a row. Now, before we get to Richard's questions, I've been lobbying to try to get James and Richard allowed to play the 21 questions, except deduct 1 point for every win, or in their cases, 3 points. So start them off with -3 and see how they go. If they win, then next year they're -4. And eventually they'll have no chance at all, but it's open to everybody.
You know, actually, I'm happier now not competing for two reasons. Number one, it ends up taking up all your time, and you don't get to spend as much time talking to the people who are there, which I really enjoy doing. So I have more time talking to the guests of the party this way. And also, I enjoy helping Max come up with the questions and, so I'm fine with not competing anymore.
All right. So much for my lobbying idea. Okay. So,
well, I keep hearing that. Then they say, well, you're a dictator. I'll say, well, I'm a benevolent dictator, but dictators don't take kindly to suggestions. But the problem is, even if I gave them the three-stroke handicap, then if they made it to the final table, they'll still wipe everybody out. And that's what happens.
So next year they're -4. And if they do it again, then they're -5. Pretty soon, when they get to -18 or -19, they're not going to do it anymore.
No, but he's saying that if we get to the final table, then what do we do? Like when we count cards, we have to cover one eye, or how are you going to?
Well, okay.
We have to put on glasses that fog our vision, or
yeah. Every year, Munchkin can close his eyes and cut cards better than 90% of the people in the room.
Yep. All right. Okay. So it's clear how well that idea is going to go. So one of the questions submitted by Richard involved the hole card spotter at third base betting $5 a hand when there's a big player playing two $2,000 spots at third base.
No, at first base. The BP is at first base. The spotter's at third base.
If you like. Yes, that's critical to the problem. Yes, that's correct. So tell us about the question, Richard.
So the question was the BP is at first base. He has two hands. He has 17 and 18. You missed getting the hole card because of the beers you had before the play, which you shouldn't have done. And the dealer has a 9 up. And so he has 17 and 18. Dealer has a 9 up. The civilian on your right starts to wave. It starts to hit his 16 and then says, no, I'm going to stand. But the dealer has drawn the card out of the shoe, and you see that it's the ace of spades. But the dealer doesn't know you've seen it, so he just puts it down, and he's now going to deal that card. So you have a pair of fours. So the question is, what is your best play? A, hit, B, stand, C, double, D, surrender.
Uh-huh.
Now, originally, when I designed the question, the card was a 10. And in discussing it with James, he said, no, that's way too easy. Everybody will get it right. Nobody will miss that if you make it a 10. So make it an ace. That'll make it harder.
He was right.
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe you're right. But it seems like I expected a lot more people to get that answer correct than did. Very few people got the answer right.
And so the correct answer, which I did not get, is to surrender, which was surprising. You're going to stand. And one thing he forgot to mention is we're neglecting casino heat, because surrendering on a pair of fours against a nine is something nobody ever does.
Oh, I don't know. I've made similar plays, actually.
Okay, good. No but, ploppy does.
But, yes, but heat aside, yeah.
All right, so tell us, Richard, why is surrendering the best play?
Wait, I want to ask Rick. Rick, did you get that question correct?
I thought I had it right. I picked stand, and I thought that was the right play. It was maybe not the best play, because you're getting back your $2.50 on surrendering your $5 minimum.
Well, I also think I also think surrendering would be less heat than standing.
But the question was, don't even take heat into consideration.
That's true. You're right. So you probably should have gotten half credit.
I think the overall goal of the question, correct me if I'm wrong, I think we're on the same page on this, all of us. The goal is for the opportunity that the dealer will not need the ace, and that first card would be available to your BP as his first card at first base. And, so either way, you just do not want to take a card. You want to let that card sit in the shoe and go to your BP at first base on the next round if the dealer doesn't need a card.
Well, that's correct, but it's also, if the dealer does need a card, you would love to have them hit their hand with an ace. Because he has a 9 up. If he has 11, that ace now makes him 12. If he has a stiff hand, his hand only gets worse. And if he has 16, he makes a 17, which is a great outcome when your BP has a 17 and an 18.
Sure, yeah.
So,
but, I was thinking along lines of the, having a first, your ace is a first card. And at that point, whatever the table max is, he's going to bet table max on that first hand, and you have a great opportunity there.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. So, yeah. Richard had
at least. Keep in mind, everybody listening, you have about 20 to 30 seconds to figure all of this out before I go to the next question.
Yes. And Richard had another question, which was equally sneaky. It involves being chased out of the Cromwell Casino in Las Vegas. For those of you who haven't been here a while, it used to be called the Barbary Coast, and then it was called Bill's for a while. So now it's at the corner of Flamingo and the Strip. So what was that question, Richard?
Right. So the question was, it's New Year's Eve, and you get chased out of the Cromwell by security, and the police are not letting anybody cross the strip. So you have to run to the nearest casino that has a blackjack table that is not owned by the same company that owns the Cromwell. So what is that casino is the question.
So I wrote down Casino Royale, which is the closest one along Las Vegas Boulevard, but not the right answer.
Correct. Not the right answer. How about you, Rick? Did you get this one?
I got that one correct. I knew the old Maxim, which is now the Westin, was a short walk to the east. Across the street, across the Flamingo gets you to Bally's, but that's under the same ownership as Cromwell. And I got it right.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
That one I was confident on.
I also submitted two questions, but since I was a participant in the contest, Max publicly declared that I should be scored as missing one of the questions. Now, this seemed fair enough to everybody, including me. And he took the point off of the easier question. Unfortunately, I missed my own harder questions. and I missed qualifying for the finals by one question.
So
if you're wondering how I could be stupid enough to miss my own questions, hear me out. Here was the question as I submitted it. How many people here at the Blackjack Ball, within three people, including Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin, have been heard on the Gambling with an Edge radio show? Do not include Michael Hyland in your count, even though Michael did call in one night in a disguised voice while his father Tommy was the guest and said the Hilton Sportsbook used to offer donuts on Sunday morning, but it doesn't do it anymore because Tommy ate all the donuts. So Michael asked his father, why did you eat all the donuts? So that was the question, which I thought was a pretty good question. Humor aside, it's a tough question. There's something like 35 potential guests if everybody who's been on the show and could have been invited to the Blackjack Ball did show up. But the show's been going on for more than 200 shows, and nobody with a life is keeping track of who's been on the shows compared to who's at the Blackjack Ball.
And plus, I don't know that you would know who all the people are because they've come on the show under pseudonyms. And, you know, you meet some guy at the ball named Joe, and he was on the show named, you know, Bob. You might not even know.
Or even Rick. I had no idea what Rick Blaine looked like until the ball. I spoke to him before the contest, and so I knew, and I knew he was there, but it was just a name before that. So I kind of went around and surreptitiously counted noses. Now, sneaky, nobody else knew the question was coming, but I was already going to be penalized, and I like to win. So all four of us tonight were on my list, and I counted 26 people. Now, possibly it wasn't exactly correct, but surely it was within three, so I felt pretty good. Now, Max, the lousy bum, decided to improve on my question, possibly because he knew from the RSVPs that Michael Hyland wasn't going to be there. What Max actually asked was true or false. Of the people actually taking this test, have more than 25% been on the Gambling with an Edge radio show? While this is very similar, it's not the same. Now, Max and Munchkin were at the ball, but they weren't taking the test. So that made 24 people. Now, I thought somewhere I heard 110 people attended these balls. I didn't count the tables, but that's about right. So 24 out of 108, that's less than 25%. So I put false. But either I heard wrong or not everybody was taking the test. Max announced 93 people taking the test. So 24 over 93 is 25.8. So the answer was true. So it was an absolute guess for everybody. And I guessed the wrong answer. In addition to being justifiably penalized for submitting it. Oh, well, not my finest moment. Did you get this one correct, Rick Blaine?
I got it.
Pure guess?
I got it. No, I knew there were a lot of people who were in the Blackjack Hall of Fame that were there. And I figured that was a strong number, and I figured most of them were on the show. I knew I was on the show. I knew Max was on the show. And I just figured it was, I think, it's probably, you know, 100, there's 100 plus people here, but not everyone's taken the test. So I figured, I think it's a good shot of being true.
And I didn't know the answer until we did the head count, but Stanford Wong had left a little bit earlier with his wife. And then my wife and my family and my son's friends and a lot of other people, just some people just don't take the test. Some of the wives of the guys.
Right, exactly.
There were 93 that were actually taking the test at that time, and that's why I put it that way. Mm-hmm. So maybe I could trip a couple guys up, and it seemed to work.
Huh, well, one guy for sure. Now,
you know, the test was very difficult this year. I mean, the average scores were lower than years in the past.
I think it was the hardest ever as far as scores. I didn't think it was the hardest test going in, but the scores absolutely reflected that. The average score had to be well south of 7.
Wow.
Out of 21.
So, Max, which question were you most proud of asking?
Well, I enjoyed asking, and I think most proud of, and I didn't submit the question. It came from James Grosjean about which of these things about James are true. And A, he once guarded Paris Hilton from paparazzi. She tried to eat a hot dog. B, he wrapped Denver Broncos linebacker Von Miller in saran wrap. C, he once started a fire in Seahawks wide receiver Sidney Rice's kitchen, and it wasn't on the stove or a fireplace. He dated a porn star who has multiple ABN award nominations. And E, he had necrotizing fasciitis, sometimes called flesh-eating bacteria. And F, they are all true. I thought that was a pretty good question because it showed he's a very misunderstood guy. A lot of people, he thinks he's just one-dimensional, and the answer was all of those were true. And he's a generous, well-rounded guy. Sometimes he doesn't suffer fools very lightly, and whenever he's in the room, just about everybody else is a fool. So he kind of gets a bad rap sometimes that he shouldn't have, I think. Wouldn't you agree, Munchkin?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's very fun, upbeat guy, but just don't take him to task on something because he will... He will cut your heart out and prove you wrong and win. He's a pretty highly competitive guy. And he was the first one to get barred from playing. Munchkin was number two. Nobody else is really on the radar.
You know, I think actually he submitted another question that I think was the best question of the ball because it really kind of speaks to the people who are there. And I was surprised that more people did not get it right. And that question was, train a player to play in Philadelphia, and he learns basic strategy perfectly, and now he is going to go to Las Vegas, where the only change in rules is that the dealer now hits soft 17, whereas in Pennsylvania – they stand on soft 17. How many changes are there to basic strategy if the dealer hits soft 17? Now, all the blackjack players in the room should know the answer to that question, but very few of them got it right. How about you, Rick? I hate to put you on the spot.
I think I got that one right. Was the answer 3 to that one?
Nope.
I actually did get that one right, but it was a wild-ass guess. Sometimes they come in.
Yeah. Well, that's a long-shot wild-ass guess because the answer was 6.
That's correct.
Yeah. 3 soft doubles and
not soft surrenders. Doubles. There are 3 doubles.
Doubles.
Right. One of them isn't
9
soft.
9 versus 2. There's 2 soft doubles. Is that right?
There are 3 doubles.
Yeah,
11 against an ace. Ace 8 against a 6.
Right.
And what was the one you said?
9 versus 2.
9 versus...
Is that right?
You know what? Now I'm going to get it wrong.
I don't think that is.
Anyway, there are 3 doubles and there are 3 surrenders.
All right. This is not our most impressive moment. Yeah. Let's go on to the final table. To
dropped it on the surrenders. Oh, I'm killing.
The 5 guys got in there, And they all use pseudonyms. So I'm just going to talk about Rick and then just say the other guys. The first one is they had to get down to four because the prizes only go four deep. So they were given a partial deck of cards with some cards taken out. And they were told they had to count using the high-low system with a side count of aces. So the first thing they had to do was to be accurate. And among people who are equally accurate, speed counts. So all five guys did it. Rick was the only one with the right answer on the first round. And so he definitely got out. He moved into the final four. And then it took a couple extra rounds to finally get a difference between the guys. So it was at that point that I realized I could compete here. I'm very slow, but I can do high-low with a side count. It might have taken me a minute and a half instead of Rick's 22 seconds, but I could have done it. But
well, anyway. I was 22 seconds.
I don't know what it was.
It was pretty fast, Rick. It was good, and it's interesting because I've tried all kinds of things with counts, and that was an idea that Munchkin gave me to throw in the side count because most of the guys that are in that room don't use a high-low, and so they kind of come in with a handicap. So if a Bob Dancer works on the high-low for two or three days, he can come in there and count just as well and oftentimes better than the guys that are put in hundreds and hundreds of hours out playing a high off or high off two or something with a side of aces. But I threw in a side of sevens, which made it tougher too. But I think you came up with a side of sevens, didn't you, Munchkin?
No, that wasn't me. My suggestion was to let them use whatever count they wanted, but just be able to say, you know, this is the count I use, and the count is X, and so this is what's left.
Oh, so that sounds like it would be a little, that would even out the field a little more on the counting, because there are a lot of people that don't use the high-low, and they're at purely a disadvantage.
All right. The second test involved card memorization. Max spread out a deck. And, you know, there was lots of cards, Queen of Hearts, Four of Spades, Five of Diamonds, whatever they were. So the guys got some time to memorize them. And then Max closed up the deck, gave them all a fresh deck. And so if the first card was the Queen of Hearts, then each of the guys had to put out a queen at the same time. Didn't matter. The hearts didn't matter, but the queen did. And if they all got that right, well, then they'd go on to the next one, and then they'd go on to the next one. Surprisingly, four of the guys, the only four left, got 13 in a row correct. This was amazing to me that nobody made a mistake for 13. A year ago, Andy Block screwed up way before that, and Max was all over him, too. But anyway, they got 13 in a row correct, and then on the 14th card, Rick was the only one who got it, so he moved on, and it took a couple extra cards, but eventually one of the guys was eliminated. So now we're down to three, and we don't have time to go through all the tests, but another one was card cutting. Max put some cards in front of you with an ace of spades at the bottom and says you have 5 seconds to cut exactly 22 cards. And if you get 22 on the nose, when we turn it over, there'll be an ace. And if you miss by one, there'll be a two or something. So Rick did it, and he was off by one. And the other guys were off by two or three. So Rick, again, won that one. He didn't win all the other tests, but overall, he was the winner, deserving winner. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now, have you posted the Gross Gene Cup in a conspicuous place?
Yeah, I have it. I have it here in front of me.
Uh-huh. Do you sleep with it?
No, that I don't do, and it doesn't have one of those cups like the Stanley Cup where we, you know, could pass it around and drink champagne out of it. That's a thought for next year, Max. But it's, you know, I don't think there's anyone more surprised than I was. I mean, considering the company I was in that room, I was just, wow.
There was one other question, the final question, which was very similar to what it was done last year, where last year I came away feeling Daryl Purpose got the shaft on that question. But the way the question worked is they each get identical partial decks. There's two guys left. They have to count it out. And then slam the deck down when they're done and announce what the count is accurately. If they announce the wrong count, the other guy automatically wins. If they get the right count, then they have to play a hand using Barona's double deck rules, which none of us are allowed to play there, but we're somehow supposed to know what the rules are. And last year, Daryl had to know that surrender on double decks was an option, whereas in most places, you can't surrender on double decks. So
and
I
not
had,
only that, you had to use an index play.
That's
based
right.
Based on our rules, yes.
And so I had, so if I were in that situation, down to the final two, you know, when pigs fly. But when if I were in there, I would have been extremely slow. I would have wasted all night counting that deck down, letting the other guy announce the count and play the hand against Mac's tricky situation. And so the guy who came in, who was Rick's opponent, was somewhat slow. I don't know if it was... he was intentionally using that philosophy, or just Rick was faster. But Rick slammed the deck down. I got the count. It's plus three. And so, good. Now you get this hand. And the hand wasn't particularly difficult. It was an ace three versus a dealer deuce. And so Rick hits it. Gets a five.
Good play. Good play, Rick.
Okay, thank you.
You know, gets a five. Now he has a 19. He stands. Gone.
Okay.
What a hell of a play. By the rules, he played it correctly. Gross Gene Cup winner. Congratulations. So this year, that part wasn't particularly tricky. And but Rick won like three out of the five questions outright. Worthy winner. So were you thinking of making it easier on purpose, Max, or why did you go easy on him this year?
I thought about a couple things. One, I thought somebody might try the game that you just talked about and sit back and wait for somebody else to make a mistake, which is precisely what you would have done.
That would have been my best chance, too.
No, you would have been able to play ace-3 against a 2.
Oh, well, this particular hand, yes, I could have played ace-3 against a 2. But using index numbers, like learning high-low for counting down a deck is a whole other thing than memorizing the index numbers, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I have not played professional-level blackjack since 93, so it would be starting all over again.
Yeah.
And it was not high-low at the time.
Well, now that Munchkin can't play anymore, or Gross Gene, I've stuck with some of the same questions, but I try to throw a little kink, as you may have noticed, into a lot of those, because some guys might practice it, and I don't know how Munchkin does that, but it seemed like every time he got at the final table and I would put out a cut and say, cut 13, well, he cut exactly 13, cut 22, he cut 22. Well, somebody's been practicing somewhere. And,
well, he has been practicing, but I don't think it was for the blackjack ball.
Getting one away is a great cut, by the way. So on the last one, I said, okay, everybody's going to think I'm going to put a kink in it, and I won't, which will make it a kink.
Uh-huh. So the reverse kink play. Should have seen it coming. All right. So we're going to do some commercials now, and then we got some more questions for you guys.
Okay.
The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else has. The main promotion this month is on penny slots. It's called Penny Perks. And there are a lot of must-hit-buy penny machines at the South Point. So whatever your normal strike number is for each of these machines, during February you should probably lower that strike number a bit due to the promotion. Double points will be on President's Day, Monday, February 16th. You'll find me at the Quick Quads machines on that day. The new 10-week semester goes into its second week this coming Wednesday, February 11th at noon in the Grandview Lounge is beginner double bonus. 2 hours later is beginner double-double bonus. These games at the South Point are the 99% versions. The South Point does not have 100% versions, which are found in a few casinos around town. The South Point version is, but you get full points on them and full mailers and stuff like that. The strategies between the 99% version and the 100% version are very, very close. Later in the semester, we're going to be teaching games such as Quick Quads and Ultimate X, which kind of depend on you knowing the, at least being familiar with the basic strategy of both double-double and double bonus. So there are also games where the flush pays more in double bonus than in other games, and the straights pay more in double bonus than in other games. So you'll see how your strategy for the various hands vary depending on the pay schedule. So it is a very illustrative game. For those of you who are trying to learn video poker and figure it out, it's easy to see on the hands of, okay, I see when the straight pays more, you do this. Or when the flush pays more, you do that, and why. So anyway, that's this coming Wednesday. This last week, we for Jacks Are Better, we had a bigger-than-average class. Wasn't quite sure why, although I got a call from Richard later in the day. He says, hey, I put it out on my Twitter that you're having a class. Did you get more people? And I go, yep. I said, I don't know how many of them got the Twitter, but I thank Richard. And
I'm going to take all the credit.
Good. So it's all Richard's fault. Good. Thank you. Now, at the Palms, the weekly 7 p.m. drawings on Fridays, they have share $10,000. You don't need to be there to win, but you need to collect by midnight or your prize evaporates. They have double drawing tickets between 4 and 6:30 Friday afternoon and 5 times entries between 7:46 and midnight Friday night. PFP, play for prizes. Up for another full week, there are Albertson's gift cards. That's a supermarket here in town. The gift cards may be earned and redeemed Monday through Friday at a rate of 0.20%. You keep your points. Starting on Monday a week later, on the 16th, you start earning points for whatever they got gift cards. All the leftover gift cards they have in storage, which could be Albertsons, could be Costco, could be Lowe's, could be Einstein Bagels, could be CVS Pharmacy. So they'll bring it all out and you take your pick. So if you take your pick on Monday, you have a bigger choice than if you take your pick on Friday. So that's videopoker.com. It's the best place to practice a lot of different games. They have daily and weekly contests. The weekly contest this week is double super times pay. This is a game which you use your regular strategy. You get you pay 7 coins a line rather than 5. There are 2 different opportunities for these random multipliers to happen. It adds approximately 0.5% to your EV. So if you could find, say, an 8-5 bonus game, which normally plays 99.17, and you find it in the double super pay, it's 99.66. So that's a much stronger game. But the variance is quite a bit higher. The variance on double super times pay approaches that of Ultimate X. So, but it's a good game to play. All right, back to the blackjack ball. Our guest next week actually got voted into the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His name is Don Schlesinger. Munch, can you tell us a little bit about Don?
Well, I don't know a lot about Don other than that he wrote a book called Blackjack Attack, which is a book that many card counters swear by. I know he's been around a long, long time, you know, at least 35 years or so. But I don't know. Rick, you know him better than I do. You probably could tell us more about him.
Don is probably one of the strongest players I've ever seen. He doesn't play that often these days, but I've seen Don play. He's precise. He's focused. And his book, Blackjack Attack, is just phenomenal. The question that we asked earlier on about, penetration levels, you mentioned the, Casino Verite and all that. I was going to also say that in Don's book, Blackjack Attack, there's an entire chapter loaded with charts, devoted to all these different scenarios with that. So Don's got, he's definitely deserving of being elected into the Hall of Fame.
All right. We'll be talking to Don next week. Now, 5 days ago was the Super Bowl, maybe 4 days ago. Now, for some people, I went to a Super Bowl party. I took my wife, Bonnie, and she actually goes for the Super Bowl commercials. Those are more important to her. They weren't actually so good this year. But there was one AP commercial. There was this one obvious AP, and although he was in an airplane rather than a casino, it was a Doritos commercial. If you look it up on the internet, look for Doritos and something called the middle seat. It is a commercial about being an AP that I think was a classic. Did you see that, Richard?
Yeah, I did see it. And actually, I've used some of those moves myself. We've all tried to, keep someone from sitting in the middle seat.
He's not just used the moves. I watched him in action once when the SARS outbreak was going, sitting down next to a player and he needed a seat and started coughing and saying he'd just gotten back from Hong Kong and he was really feeling bad. And then he started hawking all over the table. He's really good at that. He's an actor on the side too, and from Hollywood. So I watched him. He's used some of those maneuvers.
But it was a good commercial.
You don't remember that?
Oh yeah, no, I remember it very well. Actually,
he actually brags about it regularly. But there was recently, not so long ago, there was this guy who got arrested for doing something very similar to that.
Yeah. He did it about Ebola. He made some joke about having Ebola, and he got arrested. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, for causing a public panic or something. Yeah, it was crazy.
So.
And I thought at the time, I thought that could have been me. I could have easily, done that to get a seat in a casino.
But all right, so we got about 1 minute left, Richard. If somebody wants to hear our radio show, past versions of it, what do they do?
Right. So first of all, we really welcome your questions. You can email them to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge. You can send them to me on Twitter. I'm at RWM21. If you want the show delivered in your sleep, you can sign up and have it delivered at YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, or at my site, richardmunchkin.com. You can hear all the past episodes at bobdancer.com. And that's how you can find us.
All right. Thank you, Rick Blaine. Thank you, Max Rubin. Good night, everybody. Go hit lots of royal flushes.
Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.